The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Coming to you from our new offices and new studio in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Bank earnings are mixed, but markets closing in on their highs. And our guest today, Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. All this and much more on episode number 607 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And we're back. Took a week off, but we are back. Had to do a little moving as we had that flood in our office and it created all sorts of problems. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Here we are in mid-April 2019, right smack in the middle of April. And we have this new office. We're on the second floor. I have a really nice view of downtown Fort Lauderdale. And the good news is that all of our technology was elevated. And that's because we're always in hurricane mode down here. Why bother taking anything off of those mini elevation stools, if you will, for technology if we're just going to have to do it again in the summertime? So might as well keep it up. And that was good news because the flood did, in fact, come up about 2 inches into a couple of different offices, and that would have caused some problems. So the good news is, like I said, nothing hurt our technology. The floors that we had, the wood floors we had, another story altogether. But we are here getting comfortable, getting situated, getting ready to work in terms of everything is on board in our technology. Everything moved over just fine. But we have to do a little decorating now. Change it up a little bit from where it was. So that's going to be happening over the next few weeks. Hopefully that will be a quick and easy process, but I'm sure picking out all different furniture and things just to spruce it up a bit. I had this desk and my furniture for about 15 years, and I thought it would be kind of cool to refit, redo, spruce up. You know, over the weekend, I was reading an article from BuzzFeed, and it was about a food blogger, a blogger, an Instagram party that decided that they wanted to work on some of the food recipes that they saw on Instagram. So they saw these great recipes and the great pictures and the outcomes, and they said, you know what, I'm going to take my hand at going in and looking to try to emulate those recipes. So I read this article, and I thought it was really interesting because what they found was that the recipes were relatively easy to follow, but the outcomes were all over the place. Somehow, while the general taste that was expected was there, somehow when they took a picture of theirs and compared it to the Instagram photo of what was put on, it didn't look like it at all. In fact, it was pretty ugly compared to what the Instagram photo looked at. And I looked closer at these Instagram photos, and I noticed, you know, on one hand, the blogger that tried to emulate it, there was a, you know, the tomatoes were cooked and the onions, but on the Instagram foodie recipe, they looked like it was fresh tomatoes, perfectly charred chicken. It wasn't chopped up. It was just really, everything looked placed. Everything looked presented. Everything looked like it was done with possibly maybe some photoshopping possibly in there. And maybe even there was like a food designer involved. So I was thinking about this and wondering, you know, I think there's a lot of people in the investment world that do the same thing. What they do is they try to make things look really good, like your friends or maybe other brokers out there. They talk about the best things and place everything just so well that it looks just so appetizing, so good. And you try to emulate the same recipe by yourself, and you're like, wait, how come it didn't happen for me? How come it didn't work out the way the picture or the brochure said it would? What's going on with that? I mean, are we just accustomed to looking at the best pictures, the best outcomes, And then we get kind of disappointed in what happens. We get disappointed with the reality. And of course, we know this is a standard process when it comes to social media. But let's kind of get away from social media and talk about our lives and in particular focus in on our investing. We do something, we set it up, we write a plan out, we work with somebody, we think it's going to turn out a certain way. We have all the inputs that seem to line up just right. Everything is just A-okay. And then all of a sudden, the results somehow are just not there. They're just not what we anticipated. And I wanted to just stress to you that there is no photoshopping when it comes to investing. There are possibly people who put out only their best foot, make it look like something. It's not necessarily, it's not exactly the circumstance. Like they cherry pick winners. You know that, you know, you talk about the golf course conversation, you know, hey, Irving, you know, I want to let you know that I had three stocks that just went up 30% this week. And then you're thinking, how come Irving always has winners? Well, truth be told, Irving doesn't ever talk about his losers. So don't get dismayed. Don't get concerned about all of a sudden you're not doing so well. Because I got to tell you something. The fact is that there's a differential between the setup and the bragging, if you will, by Irving and the reality of what's going on actually. This is something that's done oftentimes, making things, putting the best foot forward, making things look, putting it in their best light. But don't get sucked in with this disappointment process. You know, you stay on task, stay on plan. Don't fall prey to this FOMO or jealousy for that matter when it comes to portfolios and when it comes to investing, that could really hurt you. Unfortunately, it's very easy to fall for that. Unfortunately, it's very easy to get caught up in that whole process that, you know, let's see, this stock that I'm looking at right now, from a fundamental standpoint, I just can't do it, but it's moving up. Okay, you want to take the technical side, you want to get involved with that, that's fine. There's no problem with that. But if you are a fundamental investor, you can't fall prey to just thinking that, you know what, all of a sudden I'm going to get involved with the technical analysis and then, you know, voila. Because it's probably going to backfire on you somewhere. Anyway, I have to put some more thought in this discussion. But the idea was there, right? The idea about how there is this divergence from expectations and reality, from what others seem to be doing and what happens to you. Why is my stuff not always so great? You know what? Probably is the same underlying all of it. So don't get too upset or, you know, concerned about that. Switching up, let's talk about where we are right now. So we're in earnings season, right? That's where we are. We're smack right in the beginning, starting off in earnings season. And we saw that markets got a major boost on Friday. It started off with the idea that, well, maybe we're getting closer to some deal with China. Okay, that's the weekly discussion that seems to have that carrot we've talked about in front of markets, in front of investors. And then we saw that news from Disney that they're coming out with this new streaming offering. That really helped the Dow Jones Industrial Average. United Healthcare, on the other hand, really hurt it. Pretty much the same amount of points that the Dow was going up due to Disney was taken down by UNH or United Healthcare. So that was kind of a wash. But other than that, we saw JP Morgan, the banks, generally speaking, a little bit mixed bag on the banks. JP Morgan was up nicely after their earnings. That also helped the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Banks, again, we saw Wells Fargo report, PNC report on Friday. PNC was up about 3%. Wells Fargo dropped about 3%. And here we are. Same thing that we usually see during earnings season. The banks come out and they give us their best shot, their best foot forward. And then we have to decipher exactly what their earnings and their outlook really means because it's very convoluted oftentimes how banks report their earnings. So we'll see how that plays out. Last several quarters, we saw that banks did well during their earnings and then just started rolling over. So next week, we have a good amount of companies that we're reporting. I have a list. I'm not going to go through all these because there's just too many. It's just an enormous amount. But several banks are reporting. before the bell on Monday. So we have Goldman Sachs, M&T Bank, Citigroup. We have Washington Federal. Then after the close, we have J.B. Hunt. That will give us a little bit of a take on what's happening with regard to transportation. Tuesday, we got Bank of America, BlackRock, Comerica. Then we see Johnson & Johnson. That will be interesting to watch. UnitedHealthcare, after this massive implosion that we saw over the last several days, going to be reporting also. After the close, CSX, more transportation. And Netflix will be out there. That's going to be interesting for the technology and that area. Let's see what I got. Wednesday, Abbott Labs. There's a lot. Kansas City Southern, PepsiCo, U.S. Bank Corp. And the list goes on and on and on. So we're going to be seeing a good amount of the financials and some staples, as well as transportation next week. The following week is going to head up mostly a lot of technology. We'll be seeing them also. So keep a look on that. We'll see how that plays out. We also have some economics coming up. Oh, dropping papers everywhere. Not quite used to the studio here where I got to place things. Economics coming out next week as well. Retail sales, Fed beige book, business inventories and leading indicators. What about those, you know, what about those economic indicators? Inflation starts to tick up on the headline numbers. We saw that PPI and CPI last week were pretty hot. Still seeing a little bit of a slowdown when it comes to consumer sentiment and concerns about where that's all playing out. So we'll see what happens over the next week or so with some of the other numbers that are coming out. But we do have a lot to talk about with Frank. I'll mention if you have any questions, just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and go on to the Ask Andrew section and send me your questions, your concerns, your ideas, your thoughts, feedback, whatever you want. That's what we're here for, to have this conversation. And it is a two-way conversation, so make sure to participate. If you've never done so, just go do it. Also, on the Disciplined Investor, plenty of opportunity for you to take a look at the strategies. If you're looking to, at this point, say, hey, you know, maybe I need to get a little bit more diversified. Maybe I need to look at some long short, some hedging in my portfolio. That's what we're here to do. If you've been sitting on the sidelines thinking, maybe we'll wait, maybe it's time. Maybe it's time to start the discussion, if nothing else. Take a look at the global allocations that we have, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, and Investology with this $10,000 minimum. It's a kind of a robo slash, I would say, a hybrid. We call it advisor crafted and technology enhanced. But it's a great way for you to get started with us to see how we do, what we do, how we diversify, and the process behind it. So please check that all out. We'd really like to have you as a client. And you know, you can see all those things over on, as I mentioned, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. At this point, though, we're getting right to Frank. And our guest today is Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. And he is actually our first guest in this office studio in sunny downtown Fort Lauderdale. We have a nice view of the downtown of Fort Lauderdale. I'm looking at that right now. Beautiful day here in Fort Lauderdale. So it's great to welcome Frank Curzio, because he is, by a long shot, the favorite guest on the Disciplined Investor podcast. That is a true statement.
That's expectations are way too high right now. No, really, I like it better the other way.
Oh, you got to perform. You got to perform, my friend.
I know. Now more people are going to listen. Man, I'm going to have a bad stock pick in there, and I'm going to get lit up on Twitter now. Thanks, bud.
Well, actually, no, I'm going to write something down right here that I want to talk about, because there is something that I did post on Twitter this week. We'll talk about that in a second. Okay. So I wanted to kind of talk about some of the things. Here we are right at the beginning of earnings season, and there's a lot of expectations going into earnings season. We see the markets have done a snapback rally after a very tough end of 2018. And now here we are. Valuations are popped back up. The Fed is being cooperative. You know, maybe there's a China deal, maybe there's not a deal. But let's talk about earnings season. We just saw the banks come out. We saw JP Morgan come out and Wells Fargo, PNC. Any thoughts on the banks and what they're looking like?
The banks I've been a big fan of for a while. I think the banks are, I don't think, they are in, their balance sheets are the strongest they've been probably in the history of this country. And that's because of all the regulation, where these guys are not allowed to lend. And anyone out there who has a house, who wants to buy a second house, just look how difficult it is. I mean, even if you have cash in a bank to put down 30, 40%, it's still a really difficult process based on the current laws. Now, we know that the net interest margins are actually shrinking, and we saw that with Wells Fargo, who reported last week, which, you know, the stock actually went up a little bit and fell as they went through the conference call because they said those net interest margins are going to shrink a little bit more than expected or lower. But overall, you look at J.P. Morgan, my favorite bank is Citigroup. I mean, a lot of people are skeptical, and you know, we've been programmed that there's another credit crisis coming, and this is going to – look, there's not going to be another credit crisis for at least the next 5 years, probably a lot longer. You know, they were highly, highly leveraged. They're not leveraged that much. So, you know, to make a run on a bank, they have to be highly leveraged like a Lehman. They're not because of the current laws. So what they're doing right now, where everyone's focusing on net interest margin and interest rates and, hey, we're not going to raise interest rates, right? We're going to keep them the same according to the Fed, which is not that good for the banks. But what are they doing with all this capital? Because of the stress tests now that they have every year, and then, you know, most of them pass them outside of, you know, Deutsche Bank, they could take all the cash on that balance sheet since they're not really allowed to lend it, but they can buy back loads of stock. And Citigroup is buying more of their stock back than any other bank as a percentage of their market cap. You're going to see dividends continue to rate to get higher and higher and higher with these things. And then even J.P. Morgan, despite all the headwinds, they reported record earnings, record sales, right? The best that they've ever reported in the first quarter. I think that's going to continue. The banks have some legs here. They really haven't taken off. And I definitely own a bank or two in your portfolio. Put your personal feelings aside. We all feel the same about the banks. They should have got bailed out. Nobody went to jail. I know. This is about your money. This is about... You know, if you know, you post on Twitter, do whatever you want, but from a fundamental standpoint.
So what you're saying, Frank, is kick and scream all the way to the buy button.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm talking from an investment perspective. I understand that people hate the banks. I hate the banks as well. But if you want to make money, you should buy, and they're in a very good position.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, a lot of people that like Citi, what they've done is they look at all the other banks, and they look at the chart of Citi. And if you extend that back far enough, it is abysmal. I mean, it's like if Citi even gets back... 25% of the way back up to where it was historically, it'd be a miracle. It'd be like a five bagger, maybe, you know, from the levels. The stock chart is, you know, it was cut down dramatically. Then it did a split and did all sorts of things here to, you know, so the chart itself is probably, I think, it could be the ugliest chart of all the banks. Would you agree with that?
It may be. I don't think it's too ugly. I mean, if you look 6 months from now, it's 6 months back. It's trading at the same levels it was trading. It did dip a lot. I thought it was a fantastic buying opportunity in my newsletter. So we added to our position when the thing really sank below $50 a share, which I thought was a joke. And that was during December when everything was really crashing. You know, I mean, we were crashing before that, but December was really a terrible month. But when I look at Citigroup and everyone says, well, they have more exposure overseas. Well, you know what? Europe's kind of bottoming. We're seeing, you know, trade deal imminent where, you know, at least whatever will happen, but more positive. We're seeing China bounce back. So, you know, I think globally, the economy is doing much better than they were a year ago. But also, when you look at how much stock this company is going to buy back, their earnings don't, that's going to add to earnings as it is. Their numbers don't have to be that great for the stock to go a lot higher from here. So, you know, if you're looking at the chart, listen, I'm not a technical guy. You know, you could find a good spot to buy it on a pullback. But, you know, when I look at the numbers and the constant buyback, which is going to, you know, make those earnings go a lot higher, we're talking billions and billions of dollars that they're going to be buying back with a nice 2.5-3% yield. This is something I like long term. If you're going to
I hear you about the buybacks, especially because, you know, if we do see the continuation of the same exact thing as we've seen, the only thing that's really been a real problem, has been the yield curve, which has constrained and curtailed the overall margin on these companies. They didn't participate really last year in any of the upside. The downside they are participating in. So the question then remains, of course, you know, okay, well, what's going to happen next? You know, I mean, are we going to see that now that the Fed is a little bit more accommodating, that we won't have as much problem with regard to the you know, the yield curve and the problem on margins? That's the hope right now for banks. I would tend to agree that probably the trading profits that they did because of the massive amount of selling that went on, and now that a lot more players were buying bonds, probably thinking, man, if I didn't get these bonds issued before for whatever reason, I maybe need to do it now. And that would push a lot of people into the, you know, a lot of companies into the idea of, oh, let's do a bond issue. And that's good for those banks, you know, the J.P. Morgans, the Citis, the Goldmans, et cetera, right?
Yes, and you bring up a good point. But, you know, with the banks we have to look at, and forget about the past or where the stock was trading. I'm talking about right now. Because when I look at Citigroup trading at seven or basically eight times forward earnings, right? And those earnings are going to grow going forward just simply from the buybacks. For me, looking at it right now, it's a dirt cheap stock where expectations are low. Like you said, they didn't participate in rallies pretty much over the past 18 months, 2 years. And right now, where you're seeing their banks, they've been doing this for hundreds of years. They find a way to make money in one of the toughest interest rate environments. We just saw J.P. Morgan report record profits, record sales for the quarter, for the first quarter. So that's why I kind of like them. Where I think the risk is low and it's a good stock to hold long term, just simply the buybacks and they're trading revenue, things like that. I'm sure that they'll find ways to earn money like they always do, these banks.
You know, a wise person once said that if the reincarnation is possible, when I come back, I want to come back as a bank.
I want to come back as a golfer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the professional golfers, right? Yeah. I mean, look, they don't have to talk to the crowd. They hang out. They make a ton of money. I mean, the Masters, I mean, these guys make millions of dollars. Man, that's a pretty good job. I think I want to come back.
What? Okay, let's just go there for a second, okay? If you were to come back as any golfer, who would you want to be? Besides the obvious.
I wouldn't want to be Tiger Woods. I wouldn't want to be Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson. I just want to be a guy like Justin Thomas. So he's under the radar. Not too many people know him. Young guy, very wealthy, beautiful wife or girlfriend. Just perfect life. You don't have to deal with so much like you do with all the other sports. I think like Justin Thomas, a little bit under the radar, so you can still go to the movies, hang out. Maybe people won't recognize you. Like one of those guys, I think.
All right, you know who I'd be?
Who?
John Daly.
Yeah,
that guy knows how to have a good time.
Yeah, he is. He's funny.
That guy knows how to have a good time. He drives the ball 5,000 yards, and that's by the way on a half a bottle of vodka.
Yeah, that guy does know how to party. Absolutely.
All right, let's talk about Disney for a second here. So Disney comes out with a long-awaited streaming service. They have their crack marketing team come up with a name, and it is Disney Plus. You know, they can't come up with anything more. A lot of people on Twitter said, well, you know, it matches up with their ESPN Plus. But the same thing with Apple. Apple comes up with, you know, Apple Plus, News Plus, blah, blah, blah. But let's talk about the Disney announcement. They're going to do some streaming. They're coming out, I think it's $6.99 base. It's going to be coming out in November. They're going to have a massive catalog of course, not only Disney, but everything under their whole catalog that will be coming out. And then on top of that, they're going to have releases of brand new movies when the embargo is off from the theaters and things like that. So the stock is up on this announcement. You know, let's call it about 9%, I think it was, that was up on the announcement. All-time highs on Disney. Do you think it's warranted? Because there's a lot of discussion that's going on about, oh, this is a Netflix killer. Netflix down 3% or so on this news. And, you know, now they're starting to think about assigning multiples to Disney like you get with Netflix or other media stocks. Is that warranted?
Is it warranted? Listen, when it comes to stocks, what companies like to see or what investors like to see, especially institutional investors, is a growth component. That's why there's so many value traps. Like you can buy stocks that are cheap, but you need to have some kind of growth catalyst, growth component. And Disney, if you look at the past pretty much year and a half, 2 years, they were lacking that. I mean, you know, ESPN was really slowing. Ad sales were slowing. Right. They were buying 20th Century Fox, and all of a sudden Comcast came out of nowhere into that bidding war. They'd pay more for these entertainment assets. But, you know, with this for Disney, it provides a growth catalyst. It's not going to really add anything to the bottom line for a while, but, you know, people like to see that growth catalyst. I mean, you look at the company today, Avengers is going to be the new Avengers, highest grossing movie of all time probably. You know, they bought 20th Century Fox assets, which is Deadpool and X-Men franchises.
Deadpool's great. Isn't that great? I love the...
and X-Men too. But, yeah. I mean, look, you know, you're looking at Disney, the greatest marketing company on the planet, in the world. It's basically, look what they did with Star Wars franchise. They paid $4 billion for that. And, you know, they easily made their money back right now. And they're going to generate $1 billion plus revenue on that franchise alone for the next 100 years, right? Just going to keep making movies and making movies.
Yeah, sure.
You throw in Marvel, which, you know, every single movie, no matter what, it generates $1 billion plus in sales, including international.
Right. The billions start to add up after a while.
Yeah. Well, the Parks and Resort division is coming back, too. That's the second largest division. And they have pricing power. They continue to raise prices and people continue to go. And now they have, you know, a 60% stake. They, you know, more than double their stake in Hulu with the 20th Century Fox deal. So you have a lot of growth catalysts. But with that said, look, the stock just broke out. And you never want to just jump in front of run just front of a train, right? And I think it's going to go higher here. But you have to realize Disney costs, they're going to skyrocket. I mean, with the streaming platform, they need to create great original content. That's why for this, it's not a Netflix kid. It's people believe this is a zero sum game. Like, you're going to order Disney, not going to order Netflix. It's kind of like your news service, right? I mean, some people like MSNBC, they like CNBC, right. They're going to watch totally different things, but people aren't going to subscribe to this platform to watch Disney's, you know, Marvel movies, right? I mean, almost everyone sees them in the movie theater anyway, in that experience. They're going to buy Disney because of the original content. And to have that, you need great writers, great actors. And Netflix is locking up so many people in this industry. But you know, you can look at Netflix balance sheet. What is it, $15 billion in costs for all this stuff? Yeah, you know, their costs are going to skyrocket Disney. So right now they're trading at, after this move, 19 times.
Why is Disney's cost going to skyrocket? For the original, more original content?
The original content, to hire actors. I mean, you know, it's a fortune to you know, get these movies off the ground, to hire actors, go through the whole entire marketing programs. I mean, it's, you know, you just look at the cost for Netflix.
But the big difference with Disney, the differential between Disney and Netflix is that when Disney puts out a movie, now, first of all, let's just state, obviously Netflix has millions, hundreds of millions of users. That's the theater. Disney has the theater, but now they're going to be adding this component. You know, obviously they have to build their streaming service up dramatically compared to what Netflix has. I mean, you know, they're extremely far away from any of those kind of numbers. But again, is this going to be a Netflix killer in any way?
No, it's not going to be a Netflix killer. No. The only way Netflix goes down is if their original if they fail to. I mean, you always think, like, how much original content could they come out with? But those series, they have so many great series that they come out with. People just continue to watch it. They love the binging. And with Disney, I mean, I don't have a Netflix subscription, so I could watch, you know, Marvel or past movies or stuff like that. I have it, you know, I love the original content. I love the series that they come out with. They locked up guys like Adam Sandler, you got Chris Rock. You have so many big name, and people might be laughing when they say big name Adam Sandler. Just look at the money he generates in the box office. You can think his movies are terrible, but it's about, you know, money.
That's the golfer you want to come back at.
Exactly. You'll have a lot of fun there. But when I look at Disney right now, it's trading at 19 times forward earnings, which means it has a growth multiple now. So the expectations are much higher. So be careful going into the next couple of quarters. I think it runs up the next quarter. Expectations are high. But, you know, these growth catalysts aren't going to happen overnight. You're not going to see that money flow to the bottom line. If they miss the next couple of quarters, you know, you're going to see the stock get pretty hit at this level. But with that said, you know, looking at technicals, I think it's definitely going to go higher. People are really excited about this.
Well, let's segue over to the area of tech in general, right? So tech has been, I would say, a little bit, you know, it's been charging ahead. It's been obviously leading this year in 2019. But all of a sudden, coming into the closer we're getting towards earnings, it seems to be a little bit lagging. Do you think that we've kind of, you know, jump the shark here in technology?
You know, when I look at some of these names, what I finally like to see is some separation, right? Because all the FANG names are trading up no matter what. And now, you know, if Netflix misses, you saw that get hit. Recently, it did come back, though. NVIDIA got nailed. But Amazon is, you know, getting close to its all-time highs again because, you know, they're just executing. They're in lots of growth markets, and they continue to innovate. I'm not really seeing innovation from a lot of other places. I mean, Apple came out with a lot of great news recently. None of those growth catalysts. I mean, you have to remember Apple.
I don't know.
Right now,
I don't think it was great news, by the way. I thought it was interesting news. I mean, it was great news.
It's you know, listen, they're growth catalysts, but no matter what you do, the company, the sheer size of that company, I mean, it's still 67% of sales are iPhones. The last iPhone that came out is not really that good. I mean, I bought it for my wife. She hates it.
But the iPhone 10, the X?
Yeah, the iPhone 10. Yeah, the X. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't like it. It doesn't offer anything, right? I mean, we've seen no innovation other than a pretty good camera. The face recognition doesn't really work. It works half the time for most of the phones from what I hear. But it's an iPhone company, and you have to sell iPhones. And you know, they're a remarkable company, the greatest company on earth. But I don't know how they found a way, via everything that we know about technology, where prices go down, they continue to raise their prices on the iPhone, and people were paying them. But last time, we saw that people were
right.
Like,
they hit kind of a brick wall last time.
They hit a brick wall, and that's a secular trend. That's not something like, oh wow, what is the innovation that people absolutely need? And you haven't really come out with anything. I think people are getting sick of it since the 78. You really haven't seen anything that's you know, blown away amazing. So the services are going to continue to go higher, but it's still a small percent of revenue. And even the growth initiatives that they announced going to be, you know, I don't see that adding to their bottom line anytime soon. It's going to be tough for Apple to meet their numbers. I mean, they're going to buy back loads of their stock. They have a great balance sheet. But yeah, at the end of the day, if you're a tech company, you know, you want to see that growth. And I don't see too much growth out of Apple. Facebook and Google got to be in the pressure, right? Because you know, just privacy concerns, and it's not going to matter. You know, they'll get fined or whatever. And
yeah, but Facebook, where we're seeing such an incredible amount of conversation that people are leaving Facebook, or at least they want to leave Facebook, right? And the concerns about privacy, all the expenses that they're paying for cleaning up stuff. Then we see, like, you know, all these usernames and passwords and all this stuff is found on this server, and they sold out. And yet the stock doesn't seem to be able to get held down for anything.
Because they have incredible pricing power, and they always will. Why? I think it's funny that everyone, they need, like, the politicians, and they need the media to tell them about the privacy issues, but they totally forgot about the fact that you put everything and that goes on every second of your life on Facebook, on social media. You tell people what you like, you check in, you tell people exactly where you are, and that is incredibly valuable. And the fact that, you know, with my wife, we have young kids, and just, you know, the mom groups and the neighborhood groups and stuff like that, those are important to people. And the fact you're posting pictures, you're posting everything about your lives, and they're analyzing this stuff, you know, it's, hey, if you're a company like Starbucks and you go to Comcast and say, hey, we want to advertise, they're going to give you this whole list of demographics, which you have no idea who's really watching. If you go to Facebook, Facebook's going to be like, hold on, here's 9 million people that are in your Starbucks around the world. What do you want to send them?
Right.
So you have pricing power. They have an amazing platform. Yeah. And then they have Instagram too, which is still growing while, you know, Facebook users are declining. But it's the pricing power that they have and that Google's going to have, because those are two major platforms. And, you know, it's the results that you get from advertising are incredible compared to almost any other outlet.
I am just saying that my prediction longer term is that this is going to fade dramatically. I don't know what's going to take over, if anything, but it seems to be this is a generational issue and how we grew up. I mean, don't forget, it's only what? How many years old is this whole fad, or this whole, maybe not as a fad, but how old is this technology and this way of communicating, you know, and this whole idea of using Facebook or social media or, you know, whatever you're using here? I think that we have to question, though, and this is longer term, and just keep it, you know, as for what it's worth column, is that there is going to be additional privacy concerns. People are going to eventually say, you know what, I don't want to be known everywhere and everything that I'm doing. I'm going to close this off, make it more private. Now, whether Facebook says, well, that's not good for our advertisers, and we're going to have to charge you if you want to make yourself totally private, and whether or not people pay for that's a whole different story. But I still think that people are going to get a wake-up call one of these days and realize that, you know, what am I doing here? Why am I just having this all out there, and what's the importance? It doesn't really necessarily make me feel better, and I kind of am halfway miserable looking at everybody else's video because she's skinnier than me, and he's eating at better restaurants than I am, and they're going off on better vacations than my family does, and I feel miserable about it. You know, I'm just saying.
I could say with Facebook, is someone like us that advertise on Facebook, they change their entire method, right? They're much more stringent. They don't have, you know, especially in our industry, not from us, but sometimes we get crazy promotions out from my competitors in the financial newsletter industry. But there's a whole big process that they changed. And it was a little bit of a pain in the neck to really go through it. But I really thought they were going to miss last quarter's numbers, and they actually blew them away.
Yep.
So, and there's another thing, too, when they say, well, where's the growth in the people coming online? It with Facebook, it's such a big deal because the average age is much older. The kids on Instagram, yes, they go on social media a lot more. Even, you know, whatever, pick whatever outlet you want. But the people who spend the most money are the older generation. That's who spends the money on their kids. That's who spends the money on everything.
Yeah.
And right now, those people, you know, they're not familiar with a bunch of social media platforms. They just know, like, my wife goes on and there's 50 mothers from the school that they talk to, and they have events and they have play dates. And yeah, I don't know if that's really going to change, where you're going to see, you know, it changed a lot more with kids and millennials because they changed, you know, again, they're younger. They're just the newest fad every month, whatever it is. But for the older generation, they don't really change that much. And the fact that on Facebook, I don't know if they're going to leave, but it is something that, you know, definitely I agree with you. It is a concern. It's you know, people are getting sick of the privacy. So it's something to monitor going forward.
Yeah. Let's talk about economics for a second. We did touch on the Fed earlier today. We're seeing that, generally speaking, you know, I think that we could both agree that when it comes to economics right now, that there is a noticeable slowdown in the U.S. Would you agree with that?
Yes, there is. I mean, we just had tax reforms, right? Which really, so you're seeing a ton of spending, a ton more money. They were giving checks to individuals and AT&T and stuff like that. And who else? Apple announced it. You know, so that's why the tariffs were not such a big deal, because, you know, even when I broke it down from an auto perspective, the amount of money that they were making because of the tax reforms easily covered if they were going to, you know, tariffs of 30% on steel or whatever. So you know, you didn't really see it that much in the U.S. You did see it in China. A lot of these things got crushed. But
well, U.S. steel is not looking good since the tariffs were implemented.
Yeah, no, but you're looking at what I'm saying is that even with steel costs, even if steel costs are higher, the amount of money these companies were generating just from the tax reforms was last year, but you don't have that going forward, right? So that's why it's in the best interest of the U.S. right now to really say, okay, let's try to fix this. Because right. if they don't, you're going to see China crash even more. And I kind of like China right now. You've seen a lot of these stocks bounce back finally. But when I look at it, I think you're right. I think that there's a little bit of a slowdown, but there's also positives, right? And you know, consumer spending is still pretty strong. Housing, we're seeing the high-end real estate major cities declining. Now that interest rates have moved down a little bit, and, you know, we're going into, you know, seasonal, which is positive for housing, but it's not, like, terrible. The IPO market is strong. The Fed said they're not raising rates this year, but don't look at that and say, wow, we're going to go through a whole easing cycle. It's not necessarily easing because they still said that they're deleveraging their balance sheet. So, don't think like 2011, 2012.
Right, but they're going through. But they're going instead of 50, they're going 30. Now they may go 15, and they're not raising rates, which I find fascinating. When you see the PPI and the CPI numbers come out this week, they were hot.
There's yeah, no, I think you would look at a couple of quarters because they haven't really been hot, right? There's been no signs of inflation. Right. I mean, we're seeing. I mean, Apple just announced that they're coming out with a credit card where it's, you know, no fees and, you know,
no late fees either. I don't know how they're
no
late do that.
Fees or anything.
But I'm getting that and I'm just going to keep credit going.
I know. You see a lot of people lower prices and, you know, so inflation is in check. And guys, when I say inflation is in check, we all know that we're paying more for gasoline. We know we're paying higher in tuition. We all know we're paying higher electricity costs. But what the Fed looks at is a CPI, which strips out energy and strips out some of the volatile parts. And according to that, you know, it was a little bit hot, like you said, last quarter, but it's still relatively low. So I see the Fed kind of staying on hold, you know, like they said this year. Next year is going to be interesting, but I don't know. I love to tell you that the economy is terrible or it's great, right? That's what sells, but
right, it's not. It's lukewarm. It's lukewarm. But that's really stable. How's that?
And that's usually when we look at history is a great recipe for stocks to gradually go higher, like they've been doing this year. So, because it's not too hot, not too cold. There's a lot of risks in the market, so you don't have the crazy bulls going, oh, it's going to go up no matter what, and you don't have like the market's going to decline 30%. So it's kind of a boring market, and usually in that Goldilocks scenario with the economy, usually stocks just chug along higher and. Now it comes down to earnings season, right? So
I'm still of the mindset that this earnings season is one of two things going to happen. First of all, I think that people got really ahead of themselves on this and thinking that, hey, it's not going to be as bad. Let's back up. First, we had that big dump that was overdone. Let's get that straight, right? I mean, there's no question that that dump was overdone. You know, you had the PE ratio on general on the SP was down about 13.5 or something like that from 17.5, 18. You saw stocks getting just obliterated by 30, 40%. You know, there was a lot going on there that was technically driven, algorithmically driven, ETF driven. There's just a lot of stuff going on that collided at the end of the year on top of all the concern about what was going on with tariffs and all that. And the Fed, of course, continuing their rate hiking regime. Then we get all of a sudden a bottoming that happens, and then the Fed does a pivot, and we start seeing that the initial shorts start covering. You know, the whole thing that we always see, getting back up to normal levels where we probably should have been as opposed to the extended levels that we were. And then you get the FOMO trade going on, and then you get, you know, okay, so we know that. We talked about that. We know that. It does seem to me, though, that we are a little bit ahead of our skis right now. It seems to me that every company that has reported, you look at FedEx, you look at CVS, you look at just generally company after company, even in the early stages of this earnings season, I have not seen any guidance that I'm like, oh, okay, we're kind of finishing up this. It looks like there's a lot going into the guidance, and I think there's going to be a lot of disappointment on the back end. Now, I'm not saying that stock markets are going to fall 20, 30%. I just think that stocks got a bit ahead of themselves here, generally speaking. And people, I don't know what the change was from December into January, February, March, where they're just like buying just to buy, you know, kind of turned from, all right, I'm selling just to sell. Now I'm just buying just to buy. And it could be the interest rate environment. It could be all that. But we're seeing consumers' confidence come in a bit. We're seeing that factory orders are coming in a bit. We're seeing that ISM is coming in. We're seeing that Europe is still, all of their PMI numbers are just abysmal. China may be bottoming. We'll see. You know, again, you know, when things are really good and one month is bad, it's like, ah, that's an aberration. It's off trend. When things are bad and all of a sudden we see a tick higher, but it's like, ah, see, it's bottoming. You know what I'm saying? It's a different philosophy there. But I still believe that let's put it this way. Let me say it in this word. We're vulnerable to a sell-off on individual names if we're not coming in perfect on expectations and some growth and guidance that's at least, if nothing else, neutral. What say you, Frank Curzio?
Here's what I see. I've been able to find lots of stock picks over the past 3-4 years. Just companies, even during earnings season, you know as well as I do, even with the algorithms, when these companies beat, they'll go up 5% and then go up 15%. And when they don't beat, you'll see them, you know, open up down 5% and sometimes fall 20%. And, you know, if you're able to analyze, listen to the quarter and see if this is like something that's temporary or it's just oversold, we were able to pick up a lot of stocks and do very well over the past few years. Going into this quarter, I can't tell you, this has to be the first time in several years that it's not that easy to find good stock picks, where I'm talking about the risk reward, where I just think you're taking on a lot of risk, because if the companies right now are not offering like great guidance, right? And you can't blame them. There's just so many headwinds or so many uncertainties. And they know if they get too optimistic, when they miss, they get destroyed in this market. We've seen that for the past few quarters. If you miss, goodbye. If you make it, it'll probably go up a little bit, come down. And then over the next few months, it usually, you know, trends higher. It's kind of like the way it's been. Right now, you're right. Expectations are high. But when you look at the overall earnings, we're expected to see a decline year over year in earnings, right? Around 4%.
4%, yep.
It's the first year over year decline in earnings, you know, since 2016. But is that factored in or not? For me, I would love to tell you, hey, it's going to be great, it's going to be bad, right? It's a coin flip. And from someone that listens to tons of conference calls and, you know, studies sell side analysts, which everyone should do, because those are the numbers you see on CNBC when, you know, the company beats or doesn't beat, that's basically the average of all the analysts covering it. So if you could see that the analysts are wrong in some way, which, you know, sometimes I'm able to do, or on either way, it gives you a huge advantage, whether they're going to beat or not. That's what it's going to trade on. But I've never seen such a wide gap in what these analysts are expecting. I mean, it used to be like, hey, you know, they all talk to the company, right? So the company comes out and they offer guidance, and then everyone goes around their margins and asks them questions, okay, earnings, and, you know, they build their models. The price targets are really wide right now. And, you know, so a lot of analysts aren't on the same page. I've never seen that big of a discrepancy where, you know, someone would have a target price, say, on, you know, whatever, pick any stock, but it'll be, you know, 20% higher. And some of them have sells and predicting it's going to go 15, 20% lower. And it's kind of crazy right now. So there's a lot of uncertainty, but I think it could, instead of trying to buy stocks into earnings season with that question mark, I would just pay attention to companies that get slammed. You're going to see probably 10, 15% of these things get slammed. People run to the exits and ask questions later and see, you know, that could be a great buying opportunity. Because again, it seems like when these stocks really fall and they have really good names, it gives you a good opportunity to buy, you know, some of them, not all of them, but, you know, you'll probably see that during this earnings season.
And that's something we talked about on the last podcast. I did a podcast and I talked about five lessons. And one of the things was somewhere embedded in that discussion was that you should have a list ready to go. I think I talked about it in the last podcast. You need to have a list ready to go, because once things are happening and it's in your face, it's very difficult to make decisions. If you have a list, if you have some kind of an idea of, okay, XYZ stock, you know, I really like it. I have some of it and I really like it. And, you know, if it does this or that, I will do this. That's my plan. At least if you have it written down, that was part of the discussion. Writing something down, of, okay, put it down. You may break the plan, but at least you have a plan so that you're not trying to scramble around and worry about what's happening. When you see that, you put down, okay, analysts think they're going to make 32 cents on $500 million of revenue this quarter. You know, if they come in that range with guidance that is at least equal to what the fiscal year is going to be, okay, I'll buy it if it dips down, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I'm saying? But have a plan. That's my point, right? How important is that?
Right and wrong. I got to tell you something.
Right and wrong.
That makes all the sense.
Okay, thank you.
World.
And it's all the time we have today for Frank Curzio.
Listen, I agree with you 100%, Andrew, but I can tell you, because I do this too, and a lot of individual investors are definitely going to identify with this. You'll write down a name and say, man, if this thing comes down 5%, 7%, I'm going to buy it. And then they miss earnings and it comes down 10% and it scares the hell out of you. And you're like,
no, I agree.
Oh,
I agree.
Man,
I agree. But at least you have
this thing.
Right. No, but at least you have something written down that you can reference and say, okay, this is what I wanted to do and that's what I'm going to try to stick to, versus I don't know what to do here. That's all I'm saying.
And I mean, one of the best strategies, even over the past few years, is really focus on, you know, when you first focus on earnings, focus on maybe the top 100 companies, S&P 500, and see which ones decline by more than 10%, 15% on earnings. And then analyze those earnings and see why that happened, because these companies have been in business for 50, hundreds of years, and they know how to get it right, you know, so eventually, most of them at least. But, you know, that has been a pretty good strategy. I mean, even when you saw Celgene crash not long ago, I mean, that thing bounced right back up. So, it's... That's what I like to focus on, where companies just, because when they miss earnings, they get punished so much, where I think, wow, this thing should go down 5-7%. And it's literally down 20%, because just algorithms, everything's triggering. It has nothing to do with fundamentals. It's just all the selling comes is just triggered automatically. And, you know, sometimes it provides a really good opportunity to buy some of these names. And you know, that's a strategy I've been using. It's been working very, very well. And I think it's going to work well this quarter too, because I'm with you. I think there's going to be a lot of companies that get hit. A lot of big name companies are probably going to get hit. There's just a lot of uncertainty out there.
And of course, there's a difference between long-term and short-term core holdings, tradable positions, swing trading, day trading, just trading for the earnings. Obviously, keep that in mind. Hey, let's skip over to the IPO market. You know, we saw that Lyft came out. There was pricing that was put on. It was oversubscribed. They kept pushing the price up. The final price was $72 a share, opened up at, I don't know, 78, went up to about 88, came back down. You had a bunch of guys, your old comrade over there at CNBC, Cramer, like, I don't know why he was so bullish on this stock. Talking about 72, it's got to hold 72. And this whole discussion about it's a great deal at 72. If it comes back, well, it came back. Then it went to 66, and then it kind of came back to 72. There was a lot of outrage on Twitter about his call on this. And then he was defending himself, says, when it went to like 74, you know, he's like, hey, I was right. You see? Don't blah, blah, blah. Then it goes down and takes a big dump down to 60, and I think it was trading at 58 last I saw. Is this going to be a little bit of a problem for some of the other companies, or is this really focused in on Lyft? I mean, there's a lot of IPOs coming out. It obviously brought down Uber's valuation, but, you know, what's the story with this Lyft IPO?
Yeah, this is a problem with Lyft, not the technology, the unicorns that are all coming out, Pinterest, and you know, just tons of them that are going to come out with Uber. I'm worried about this name. This is a name I really spent time researching, and I think the numbers are really padded into the IPO. You're looking at a $15 billion valuation when they first came out, and I think it was October, November, said, hey, we're going to come out with our IPO officially. And they went from $15 billion to $25 billion valuation, right, in a couple. What has changed with Lyft to justify that kind of move? Yeah. Nothing.
Right.
So,
right.
But when you really dig in, and this is what I did with this company, they significantly raised prices last quarter, right, for the average revenue per user. So basically that's, you know, what they're charging for each, you know, every time they drive somebody. And I mean, you're looking at cost up tremendously year over year, but last quarter into this quarter, right? So, you know, they wanted that number as high as possible because that's the one that people are going to focus on, and you see it going higher. And I was a little worried about that because when I look at the market share numbers, there's a consultant that says Lyft has 39% market share. And this consultant, which everyone's basing their research on, even Citroen that came out 72, 73, and I like those guys, but I actually tweeted and said, yeah, I think you want to look at a few more things, because the consultant that actually provides those statistics for Lyft and everyone's paying attention to is an investor in Lyft. And then they have another independent consultant who has no ties to anything, independent, that covers the industry. And I think it's called Second Measure, and they're saying that Lyft has a 29% market share, not 39%. That's a massive, massive difference, right? So that's a big discrepancy there. That's
right.
One.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is when you look at the restricted stock units, employee-based options, all that, which, you know, a lot of those things are set, you know, pre-market, a lot of those things are in the money. That's going to result in 25% dilution, 25%, which is insane, which people aren't talking about. And then when I look at their underwriters, it was JP Morgan, Jefferies, and Credit Suisse. Andrew, what's missing there? This is the most popular IPO.
I think it started with a G.
Goldman Sachs, yep. Morgan Stanley, yep. And, yep. Right? Why aren't they on this thing? And which, you know, I think they're going to, you know, short the crap out of this thing, and they're probably doing so right now.
Well, they did. Did you see the story about Morgan Stanley setting up a product? I sent you the article on that.
Yeah, I mean, they disputed. They said, no, they're not shorting the stock. Well, I don't even, but we know they're shorting the stock. I mean, if you look even the short ratio, and it's a fortune to short this thing, but I really looked at those numbers, and there's just so many red flags with Lyft, where $15 billion valuation going to $25 billion valuation. And I hate the fact that individual investors are getting smoked on this, right? Because You don't get the chance to invest in these things early on. You're investing in this, Alibaba, Facebook, when they're multi-billion dollar valuations, where most of the main growth took place. Yep. But remember, yep, guys, when a company's IPOing, it's a liquidity event for the insiders. Some of them have to hold for 6 months.
That's all it is. That's all it is.
But they're selling it to you at a much higher valuation when they got in the stock at 3, 5, 7, 10, 20. And, you know, here you are buying it at 72. And it's a shame because when you look at the valuations, and I look at the numbers, you know, even that consulting firm, if that market share is 29%, the company's not growing as fast as people think, yet it has. And they actually came out and said, we're not generating money forever, basically. You know, we're not going to have profits forever.
Uber said that. Uber came out and said they don't think they may be profitable ever. I mean, that's a standard line in IPO disclosure. You know, I'll talk about
that's
that.
Okay. That's okay if you're Amazon and you're able to grow. That's fine, right? You don't have to pay taxes on it. They found ways to grow. They put a lot of money into investments. That's fine. But if these Lyft's numbers are 29% market share, not 39% market share, you can't have a company that where you say, well, we're not growing earnings. They're spending a ton more money. And by the way, I've talked to a lot of drivers as well in Uber and who drive both Uber and Lyft. And what Lyft has to do is they're going to have to increase their cost to make people, because if they're going to drive during peak hours, they usually get incentives. Uber provides like $10, $15 to these drivers. So not only do you have your fare, but during those peak hours, that's already factored in. Lyft is just starting to do that, which is going to add to cost. So now you have costs going up. You have a company that's not really growing that much, trading at a crazy, I mean, you can't even put a multiple on it, not making any money or anything. It's really dangerous here. If you're going to buy, you have to wait for the next couple of quarters when they come out just to see if the numbers are right. But I just have a feeling the next couple of quarters could be really bad for Lyft. And I've been telling people to avoid this thing.
But Frank, yeah, they have scooters.
I know. Listen, I'm not right. I'm not right all the time. Not right. I'm not saying that. I just, when I see red flags like this for individual investors, it does make me nervous. And I don't know. I just think that at a $25 billion, it's now $20 billion valuation, but I think it's crazy even telling the stock here right now. You just have to see, I have to see more evidence, and numbers don't make sense to me from what I looked at.
All right, moving along here. Lots more IPOs coming out. We'll see what happens with those. Oil and gas, some M&A in that industry. Gas prices have been rising. Oil prices have been rising. Crude oil's hitting the 64 range, give or take a little bit on that. Obviously on production discussions, et cetera. Do you think there's anything here, anything important? I know you cover a lot of the space and, you've been a big advocate of certain areas around the country and in various names. What you thinking here on this sector?
Talking about the deal in general, I mean, CVX, I think, is doing a great job. I mean, people are going to say, why are you paying a 33% premium? It's basically where Anadarko was trading 6 months ago, and it's still half the value of the company that was trading at in 2014. So they're getting a good deal on this. With that said, for me, when I look at different parts of the industry, the shale producers, I think, are going to be in a little bit of trouble here. You're going to hear, well, they can produce and prices are going higher. They can produce at $39, $40. That's in like four counties out of like the whatever, 20, 30 in the Permian. Most of the production for most companies are not cheaper than $55. We're higher than that price, and that's fine. But the amount of debt that these guys pushed out from the last time oil prices crashed, a lot of this stuff is coming due. And the fact that a lot of these things are depleting now, the cost of drilling, went down a little bit, but still, these guys really have to drill a lot. You're going to see a lot more production come online. So prices are probably near their peak, if I had to guess. And when they come down, I'd be careful. I think a lot of the shale producers are probably shorts here. We have an analyst, Michael Alkin, that's covering the sector really well, too, that goes into lots of details. But, I'm definitely with that sentiment where, these things have definitely moved up a lot higher. And I think a lot of these share plays are going to be short, especially, not really the main ones, not, EOG and Pioneer and stuff, or Continental, well, maybe Continental, because they have exposure to a much higher area in the Bakken. But a lot of these names, I think, are going to be shorts at this level. I don't see them generating enough profits to pay off their debt. I just see earnings going a lot lower over the next couple of years, unless, oil prices go to 100. And that could happen.
And that's also and that's also other pain that goes along with that, of course.
Yeah.
For individuals, et cetera. All right. And so what's your favorite sector right now? What are you thinking? I mean, you're loving staples. You like the utilities. You like the technology area. What, healthcare?
I love healthcare. I think the insurance companies, I've done extensive research on this, and it's really crazy. The amount that everybody knows costs are going higher, but there's no solution in sight, and
none.
It's getting worse.
Zero.
We're talking about, guys, for my business, I'll share with you. I have to make $300,000 a year to pay my insurance for my company. I mean, think about that for a minute. So it's, we have 17 employees now, so, and we're growing, but the amount of costs. And not only that, they barely, we have like a great, I always had great benefits. You know, I was told by very smart people, make sure you offer good benefits, some of the best in the industry.
Yeah, but the problem is the benefits are so expensive right now. That's the problem.
They're expensive. It's the first question if you're hiring people in their prime and they have families and 35 to 45, you know, that's the first question they ask. And it's true. And we have good benefits. Even when all our benefits are good, they don't, they barely cover anything now. I mean, we're paying costs out, you know, just you got, you go there, it's $30 to just to walk in, and you know you're getting a bill for $200-$300 here. Like, what's the insurance for? But it's just going higher and higher. They're covering less and less, which you know is going to piss a lot of people off. But it's going to be much more profits for the insurers, which is very important. So I also like airlines, not American Airlines. I love Delta. I think Delta's still Delta's cheap, very very cheap, growing super fast. I still think they're going to continue to raise that dividend, 2.5% yield. I do like some of the banks here. Guys, if you can, try to get a little bit of exposure to cryptos. I think we've bottomed that area. You're seeing them really come back. I launched a security token offering for my business, which was successful. Very exciting. One of the first to do it in the whole entire industry. And, you know, the demand that I'm seeing, the statistics I'm seeing, there's tokenizations here where they sell off, you know, a portion of your assets, and we're going to be trading on, you know, the security token exchanges. Like T0 and Open Finance and stuff. But there's, you know, there's a lot of cryptos. A lot of them, like 80% of the ICOs, where those are the utility tokens, which don't offer you an equity stake. A lot of those are worthless. But the ones that are surviving and that did well, they're really starting to bounce back. So you're seeing separation in that industry for the first time. Much more coverage, more regulation coming, which is great. And China a little bit. I still think you have more upside. I know these things bounce back tremendously, but you know, the Alibaba's, JD.com's, they're probably going to continue to go higher because it looks like there is a deal on a table, and you know, it's going to happen pretty shortly.
Yep. So Frank Curzio from Curzio Research, you can get, I think you still have a sample trial thing going on, don't you?
Yeah, we have for my signature newsletter, Curzio Research Advisory, it's $39 for the entire year, and you can cancel whenever you want, which is good. It's, you know, so you can go in there to our website, CurzioResearch.com, and we have lots of free stuff as well. So really cool. You know, just 30-day money-back guarantee, no questions asked, because, you know, whatever you do, we have a lot of research. You'll go in there and see all the companies we recommended and everything. And usually when people do that, they tend to stay and become long-term subscribers.
All right, great stuff. I appreciate you coming on. See you soon.
Thanks, brother.
All right, bye. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Show notes are over on The Disciplined Investor, show number 607 for this week. Check that out. Go over there and see what's available and more information on how to get in touch with Frank and find out more about his newsletters, etc. So we'll be back next week. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you then. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.